Looking to increase your income streams? Not sure how to build that real estate investing side of your wealth builder's pyramid?
You're listening to Queer Money episode 498. Today, we're talking with Jason Muth of Pride Away Stays about how he got into the short-term rental business.
Jason stepped away from years in corporate America after his side gig in real estate investing called Straightforward Short-Term Rentals started earning him more money than his day job. He then launched Pride Away Stays, a boutique gay-owned, tech-driven short-term rental co-hosting business for homeowners and guests in historic and magical Provincetown, Massachusetts.
Let's hear what Jason says about real estate investing and how you can become a real estate investor too. Now on with the show. You're listening to the Queer Money Podcast, personal finance with a rainbow twist.
Queer Money is dedicated to financial independence, financial well-being, investing knowledge, and the intersection of all things money as an LGBTQ person. In the market for a new ride? Capital One Auto Navigator makes car buying easier. Search for a car you love and pre-qualify for financing to see your real rate and monthly payment without impacting your credit score. Get started today. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator for details. Welcome, Jason Muth, to the Queer Money Podcast. We're excited for a meaty discussion on short-term rentals.
Oh. Yes, it's a topic I know very, very well. It's a topic I kind of fell into. It was my side hustle back in the day. And now suddenly it's, you know, what I do full time and think about 24/7. So thank you for having me. Can I just say that I love your podcast and you guys do such a great service for this community. I don't think there's enough of them, enough podcasts that talk about financial issues and planning and, you know, financial independence and happiness and how it's all correlated. And I think Queer Money, you know, not only is just one of the only ones that does it, but you guys do it really, really well. So thank you for the service.
Thank you very much. I don't know how to bounce off of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you'd have a glass of champagne now.
We're done. Let's just hang up, right?
You know, it's over.
Oh, give us more. Give us more. No, I'm just kidding.
So you started off, that is pretty interesting. You were initially in corporate America doing mostly media, it looked like, in New York City. And then this was short-term rentals was your side gig that now evolved into sort of your full-time business that looks like it's exploded. We often talk about our audience about try to encourage them to consider starting a side gig to help increase their income streams. And that side gig could turn into a full-time job. Can you sort of elaborate on what that experience was like for you?
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, like, first of all, let me say I'm Gen X. I'm unabashedly Gen X. I love my generation. We're a small generation, and I'm actually leaning closer toward the millennial side. But I went to college in the early 90s. I was supposed to go to med school. I took the MCAT and everything. I went to a great school. I went to Brown. Loved getting in there and going through the college. But I fell in love with the radio station there. And I got into media through that back door. And suddenly, you know, 25 plus years later, after leaving Brown, I'd worked a number of media jobs, but always on the other side of the microphone or camera. So it was always market research, audience insights, sales, digital sales. You know, so I kind of worked my pathway through the way that you do in that business. And it's a very, very tough industry. Like every year, you know, it's like a game of musical chairs and they just pull a couple chairs away each year, right? You know, we see a lot of the layoffs that happen, not just in tech these days, but in the media world. It's just been consistent. So, you know, my time came a couple of years ago. I like to say that my job ended, right? You know, because it did. Like they eliminated the position, but I was already putting I planted the seeds 8 years prior to then to have my next chapter, right? It's not even a plan B, but it's a chapter two in my working career. So we started listening to a podcast called Bigger Pockets, which is a massive real estate community that we discovered in the mid 2010s. And Rory and I, my husband, would listen all the time we were in the car. He's a real estate attorney and a real estate broker. So like, it's kind of just an easy conversation for us to be having. It wasn't like I had to get a spouse on board with doing real estate on the side, which is definitely a challenge in a lot of, you know, same-sex and heterosexual couples. If one person wants to do something along this line and the other's not on board, it could create relationship strain. So we were starting to put this plan in place, I don't know, like 20 years into my career, unknowing that it was going to lead into this. I just thought it was a cool thing to do to start to diversify my finances. And we'd saved up enough money to have a down payment for a second home, which we ended up buying in 2016. But, you know, Bigger Pockets really got us the kick in the butt to go do it. Because one of the things that Bigger Pockets encourages is just, you know, just finding your community of people, asking a lot of questions, going to a lot of meetups, really investigating the real estate space and then taking action. If you don't take action, you know, you're just kind of stuck and you're just listening and you don't do anything. So So we took action in 2016 and we bought a home up in New Hampshire on a lake that my in-laws had fixed up two small cottages in the years prior. And they actually were short-term renting one of them. And the other one, they would go for weekends, you know, like from their primary home, which was an hour and a half away. So we stayed in one of the houses one summer, and this is when my dog was still alive. It was the middle of the summer, so the sun came up at like 4:45 a.m. right through the window that we were sleeping in that room, and the bed was so uncomfortable. I said, I'm not going to stay in this place if I have to come up here and we're going to have kids, and you know, like this is not going to be my vacation life. So we randomly saw a house for sale down the street, and it had been marked down a couple times, you know, price reductions. We negotiated a great price and said, hey, I think that we could do something on Airbnb. I've heard of this platform before. And sure enough, we just started doing it, and we learned along the way. I like to say we built the parachute as we were, you know, coming down and off the plane. And that first year was just, every year is a lesson. Right? Every year you learn something new with all the guests that you have, but you start to get really comfortable renting this house out. And then that turned into a second, a third, and a fourth, and a fifth, and hopefully more in the future. But it was the thing that we would do on the weekends. And, you know, we would leave our jobs on Fridays, we'd come up to the lake, we'd fix it up, we get to see the in-laws, we get to see friends up there. And we started renting them out. And then the money started coming in, and the money got better, and COVID hit and things changed, and then things got really good. And then I realized I didn't want to do my job anymore and wanted to just do this. So, you know, here we are.
Nice. I think a couple of things that I like about your story or what you've just told us is a lot of times people think that if they want to start something, they've got to have like this amazing idea of something completely unique to start a business. I love that you and your husband just said, what do we already know? What are we already good at? What do we already understand? And let's go with something like that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that I think a lot of people don't really remember the fact that short-term rentals have been around for decades before Airbnb. People mm-hmm. have been doing this for a long, long, long time. Whether it's in resort areas or in the city, people have been doing short-term rentals for a long time for a variety of reasons. Airbnb or VRBO or all the other platforms that now offer this just kind of democratized it and made it a little bit easier for individuals to put the information out there that they had something available.
Yeah, two things right there. I mean, first off, you're 100% correct. In fact, we've chosen to go to classic vacation markets that have existed for decades. Okay, so like the Lakes region in New Hampshire, we have properties on a lake, a small lake called Baxter Lake, which is in Farmington, New Hampshire, which is not like a traditional vacation destination, but going to the lake is. And the community around that lake, I'd say, you know, 40% of the people live there full time. The rest of them, they're homes that are either second homes or they rent them out, right? So like there was a culture of rentals around there. Lake Winnipesaukee is the really big lake in New Hampshire. And that has just been, you know, that is the vacation destination for a lot of people in this greater Boston area. The other destination is Cape Cod, which is where we also have property on Provincetown. And P-Town is also a classic vacation destination for decades. Everyone's been going to P-Town. You know, if you're an artist, if you are a fisherman, if you are in the LGBTQ plus community, you know, you might choose to go to P-Town and make it your own. And rentals in P-Town have been happening for a long time. You know, I'm sure we'll get into some of the drawbacks and some of the, you know, criticism against Airbnb and short-term rentals that have popped up of late. We'll get into that later in the podcast. But, you know, these are markets that this has been happening for a long time. So that's kind of where we decided to go. I know that some other people are investing in markets that maybe weren't as classic with being able to have short-term rentals. And, you know, I have a lot of thoughts on that. Like the suburb that I grew up outside New York City, I couldn't imagine houses on that street being short-term rented to the level that we are. First of all, people wouldn't want to go to them to have vacation. But second of all, like it's just not that type of neighborhood. So I do feel like it's important to go somewhere that maybe is friendly to this. And we'll talk about regulations in a little bit too. But one other thing I want to touch on there is community and building a community of people that understand and know how to do this. We did this on our own for years through Bigger Pockets, through the forums, through maybe meeting some people that did this, but I had no one to talk to. And, you know, being part of the queer community, like we know how important it is to have our own and people around us and people that we could relate to, sympathize with, have fun with. I didn't really have that community. And I found it after my job ended when I went to a real estate meetup in the area. And one of the speakers is now a coach in a mastermind group that I joined called STR Secrets. I've been in it for about a year and a half. And I owe so much to the group because I found people that spoke my language. I finally did. You guys might get this reference. A lot of people don't get the reference, but like, do you remember No Rain, the video by Blind Melon, like the bee girl? Yes. She was dancing around. So I was the bee girl and I couldn't find all the other bees. And I finally found all the other bees like in this STR Secrets Mastermind group. And I realized that like, there's a lot of strength in community of people doing this together, independent of one another, but together, right? And there are people that are pushing. We're all pushing ourselves to be better hosts, be better operators, to be better with our guests and our clients. It got me to launch Pride Away Stays, you know, which is the co-hosting short-term rental property management company serving the gay community in Provincetown. Like we launched that last year as a direct result of being in this mastermind and having a community of people that I believed I could learn from. And I said, if these guys can do it, I could do it. So I think it's critical to have a community of people having conversations with, regardless of whatever kind of level of entrepreneurship you have. And it doesn't have to be an idea that nobody's thought of in the past. This community, this mastermind that I have, they have a blueprint, right? Like they have documents that we could use and customize. They record every single one of their coaching calls. They have all these like, you know, these lessons you could learn from. And I look at it and I say, if other people have done this, why don't I just follow what they did and then give it a little twist? Right. And that's what I've done with Pride Away Stays. That's how I operate our own properties.
Absolutely. With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC. God, there's so much to unpack there, but I want to dial back a little bit. You were saying that you guys initially discovered this through Bigger Pockets. What resonated with you with Bigger Pockets and what then made you think that you could actually do this successfully?
I mean, the stories seem so relatively simple. I mean, a lot of them are based in kind of the area where, you know, where you guys live. It's a lot of Rust Belt markets, you know, places in the eastern part of the East and the Midwest, you know, like the Detroits and the, you know, Toledo's and St. Louis's and Cleveland's of the world, where people would buy all this property up. They did this thing called BRRRR, which is buy, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat. Okay. So that's a term that I think that they coined. We never quite BRRRed here, but a lot of people do that in the Northeast. They did back when interest rates were a lot lower than they are right now, but it was their way of saying, you know, hey, I'm getting into these multifamily properties and, you know, look at this. I have 700 doors. I always thought that was weird when they talk about that. I'm like, I don't care how many doors you have. It all goes back to like your why. Like, why do you want to do this? Do you want to have 700 doors or do you want to just have like financial independence and like happiness in your life and, you know, your time back?
It's the same reason that some people's car engines are so damn loud.
Yeah. So we looked a little bit more at that. And I said, you know, where do we want to be with our lives, you know, as time goes on? You know, I'm 9 years older than my husband. We have almost 5-year-old daughter. Like as we record this, she's going to be turning 5 soon. So I'm a little bit of an older dad. He's kind of in like the wheelhouse of like where people in the Northeast have kids. And, you know, I look at like right now she's in pre-K. Like I just walked her over to school and came back and here we are recording. And in 3 hours and 10 minutes, I'm walking right back to go pick her up, right? I like having a lifestyle that allows me to do that while I could still run these businesses. So I started with our why. And then I said, how do I get there? I realized my W-2 job that I worked for a long time. And by the way, we did great. Like I was doing really well at work. It just kind of got boring. And I was starting to work on a plan, an exit plan. You know, I was going to volunteer myself to be put on the list as a tribute, you know, but they volunteered me shortly before I was able to do that. And it worked out fine because, you know, on we go and I get to get going with what we're doing right now a little bit sooner. But I knew I didn't want to do that anymore. And I didn't see 20 more years of doing that type of job. It just, I didn't see it. It wouldn't lead into my happiness. So I saw Bigger Pockets as, you know, my answer to finding this real estate investing community. And then we just happened to go down the short-term rental road. You can go into industrial real estate, commercial real estate. You can go into notes. You can go, there's all this stuff You can learn on Bigger Pockets. I've told so many people about Bigger Pockets. It's a free resource. Like if you're listening to this and you really want to get into real estate investing, that is literally the first place I always point to people. Their books are fantastic. We've interviewed their hosts on our podcast, the Real Estate Law Podcast. Like we're so grateful that we've had some of them on our show. It's just so much free education that you can get. Are you guys fans? Like, have you been on Bigger Pockets?
Oh yeah, totally. We've been on Bigger Pockets. We've had Mindy Jensen on here on Queer Money twice.
Oh really?
We had Chad Carson on a couple years. I still think his book is probably one of the best real estate books for people to read if they want to start figuring out if they're interested in real estate and what kind of real estate investing they want to get into. Mm-hmm. We're fans.
I will say that I think that there's some quality people on the Bigger Pockets side. And I think that there are some folks who are so bro and so focused on profit at all cost that it's rather disappointing.
Well, I think that's so, the number of doors guys.
Yeah. I think that there are some people there that are doing a service to their community and to the people that they serve by providing rentals. And I think that there are some people there that all they want to do is to tell you how many millions of dollars or how many doors that they have. And it's...
I mean, that's
the way with every industry, right?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, like there's a layer of toxic masculinity in everything that happens right here. And especially in the real estate world, like when you go to meetups, it's like all dudes. Like I kind of have lived a heteronormative life, frankly, even just despite not being part of that. But I think that's how I've been able to kind of find my way through a lot of those communities and just kind of either brush it off or just, you know, either assimilate and learn. Can I shout out to Bigger Pockets people? Like we had Dave Meyer on our podcast, who I think is fantastic. He has great insights, the Data Deli. I literally bumped into him here in Newburyport, Massachusetts, where we live, at a coffee shop. And like, I went up to him and I was like, I met you at Bigger Pockets. You don't know who I am. I love your stuff. He was on his way to his wedding.
Stalker.
So it was a little bit of that, but like his fiance, as I found out afterward when I invited him on the podcast, his fiance was like, gave him so much grief because like he never gets recognized in the US. Like they live over in Amsterdam now, except at the Bigger Pockets conference. Then he's a celebrity. So his books are great. And Scott Trench's stuff, I think, is really good. Scott wrote a book called Set for Life. And I think it's a really good starting point for
Scott's
anyone.
Great guy too.
Yeah. Great guy too. Like he is the opposite of like what you've just described with like he's a bro, but he's not like the how my chest, I have all this money, bro. He is the like,
hear me roar.
Anyhow.
So I want to go back. So you're listening to Bigger Pockets podcast. What were the first few steps that you took from listening to that podcast to actually executing on making this dream happen?
Going to real estate meetups. So we started showing up at local real estate meetups in the greater Boston area. At the time, we lived in South Boston. So we went to some in the city. We went to some in Somerville. We went to a bunch of them. Like, and the two of us went together. Like, we had no kids, so we could just go. We met people, and we started building relationships. That was step number one. I mean, you can't do this yourself. Mm-hmm. So you have to meet other people that do this type of thing. So I always encourage people to go to meetups and meet people. And the people that are at meetups want to be met. They want to network.
Right.
So they're the easier network that you could build. It's all very straight. So, you know, what I found around here, it's all a very straight community. But I mean, let's face it, this is Massachusetts, right? We're pretty liberal.
The gayest state in the union. Every single county in Massachusetts.
Which is the largest percentage of LGBT.
Right. Every single county in Massachusetts has above the national average number of LGBT people. So...
I made sure I listened to that episode before this podcast, like of your analysis. And I loved how you were trying to say Worcester, right? You know what? You were like,
we practiced Worcester. That forever. But you know, what's funny too, is we're interviewing Farnoosh Tarabi later today. And I was listening to her book so we could interview her. And the second place that she lived growing up, she's like, Worcester. I'm like, David, we know somebody who lived in Worcester.
It is a hard place to say. There's a lot of those towns around here that like I had to learn how they were pronounced when I moved up to this area. But yeah, I would just say go to real estate meetups and start meeting people and having conversations with folks. Reach out to folks, build a profile in Bigger Pockets, connect with people on there, lurk. Literally, I mean, gays are really good at lurking online, aren't they? Like and stalking people and looking on social media. Like, so just see what you see. Listen to lots of podcasts, like, you know, but don't do it forever. Like, it's not the kind of thing that you need to do for 3 or 4 years and then say, I don't even know where to start, because it could become analysis paralysis. Like, I would advise picking a direction that you think you'd be comfortable with. Like, maybe it's a situation where you buy a multifamily house yourself and then you live in one of the units and you rent out the other one just to get started. That is the BRRRR strategy. Then you could move out of that, you know, a year or two later. Keep it if you can, rent out both units, and then you do it again at another property. If you want to do short-term rentals, like the advice that I give is find a market that you want to be in yourself. And if that market is a market that's near where you live, like within a 2-hour radius of whatever metropolitan area you live in, do it. Like, see, you know, if you want to visit that place because you're going to be spending a lot of time there fixing it up, you're going to want it to be somewhere that you want to be. So why not try that? Like, find an area that you enjoy. It's not simple because some places are just super expensive, but you know, keep looking and looking, and eventually you'll find something that, you know, maybe fits your budget. And then you jump in and you just kind of get going with it.
So yeah. Many people are successful with real estate investing. It's not a guarantee for everybody, but so many people are. There's no reason why 95% of our listeners can't dive into it and give it a try successfully.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I do appreciate that you're talking about here is something that John and I call building your power tribe. You have basically two groups of people in your life. You have your friends group, and you can have fun with those people. And then you have your, for lack of a better way of saying it, your income business group, the people that you actually want to talk business with, the people that you want to connect with. And you find that there's an overlap in that group. And where that overlap is, there are people that you will have fun with and be able to talk about business with. And this is your power tribe. Those are the people that you're going to end up learning the most from, developing the best relationships with, because you have so much in common with them, or you want to have so much in common with them. And it sounds like you started out going to these meetups, going to these conferences, reading these books, listening to these podcasts. That is your way of finding the people who are in your power tribe. And we always recommend, folks, don't just have a friends group, have a power tribe as well. The people that you want to be able to get enthusiastic about how you want to grow your life, not just how you want to live your life.
That's amazing advice. And, you know, it's something that I think lends to the social world that I built as well. I mean, a lot of, we all have our own journeys and our own, you know, ways that got us to where we are today. You know, I didn't start participating in gay activities in, you know, the Boston area, like organized activities, until like my early 30s, when I joined the Flag Football League in Boston. And I'm still connected to Flag Football. We just had our 25th anniversary last year. And it, you know, it's a big part of my life. I'm now one of the referees in the league, but I was a captain for so many seasons. I played for a long time. I also played in the Beantown Softball League for many, many years, you know, 12 or 13 years. That's where I met Rory, my husband. So I have a lot of friends in those leagues. And those two leagues, you know, comprise a lot of my LGBTQ plus friend group. There were some friends that I actually had prior to then that I'm actually still friends with today. I just texted one of them a couple days ago. But those areas right there, like once I found that component of the social world, like that satisfied that part of my life, right? Let me just take a backward step. Like that, the job I had prior to joining all that stuff, I was on the road constantly. Like I was conducting focus groups in markets all around the country, working with radio stations everywhere and morning show talent. And it was a great job, but like, I was like in my early 30s and I was like, I don't want to be on the road constantly. Like I want to meet people here. Like I live in a great city, Boston. I'm never here. No one knows if I'm ever in town. So, you know, when I left that job for a local job, I was able to kind of form some better relationships locally, which, you know, satisfies that level of happiness. Right. And I had such great time in Beantown Softball League and Flag Football and all the different social activities that those two leagues afforded. But to your point, we never talked about finances, right? And that was one thing I was thinking about when I was coming on this podcast. Like, you know, my friend group from those leagues, you kind of know what some of them do for work. You probably don't know what a lot of them do for work. You know, the great equalizer is being on a team with them, the competition on the field, the social world afterward. But a lot of times you don't talk about that other stuff. So I don't know. I didn't know where to find those people in that group. All right. I kind of knew a few of them, but didn't know a ton of them that I could have that other layer of my life's conversation with, which was that, you know, the how do I make money? How do I get ahead? How do I have that second thing? How do I do real estate? So that was a challenge, frankly, you know, because I don't think we have enough conversations among our friend group about money. Like we don't talk about it. Everyone is just competing with each other, trying to live the most fabulous life they can. We see what we're all doing on social media. Lord knows, you know, how much money people do or don't have. We just don't have those conversations. And I think that we should have more of them.
Yeah. I think there's a general assumption by the way we present ourselves on social media, that all of us are fabulously wealthy. I had a conversation on social media recently with a trans person who said all white gay men are rich, and which we know obviously that is not true. But I think that if we were to have open and honest money conversations, and it doesn't need to be about how much we have, but about what we're doing to try to live a financially stable or successful life. We all want to be financially stable and successful. We should be having those kind of conversations with our friends, as well as having the conversations about who won Drag Race last week or what the new fabulous
which
place
I know
the
answer, and I know the answer to that question too. You know, yeah. Like, I mean, I have that both components of my life. But
it's like,
you know,
your Renaissance man.
Wow, that's not true. So my daughter, she calls drag queens dragon ladies. She loves watching the dragon ladies.
I love that.
So, yeah, so we watch it together. But I just have a feeling that people, you know, if they listen to this and they say, maybe I should talk more about finances to my friends, like maybe it'll open up one more conversation about doing that, or, you know, a side hustle that turns into a full-time job. You know, I'd like to encourage people to kind of pursue that type of thing. We don't talk about it. Like, you know, we talk more about Drag Race and what's happening on the field and pop culture, you know, like even, you know, all the gay podcasts out there. I mean, this is like one of the few that talk about the subject that you're doing. Like everything else is about, you know, cocktail hour and relationships and everything. And those are important, but, you know, there's an overabundance of those conversations that are happening. Like, I don't see why there aren't more of these, because, you know, personally, I think finance, good finance, leads to stability. It leads to happiness. It leads to confidence. And that leads to fulfilling lifestyle, you know, and then it leads to that life that we all think everyone's living, but then we're actually living that life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 100% agree with you. It's like you've been listening to our show.
Yeah. So let's get back to the topic at hand.
All right. Back to short-term rentals. But yeah, but short-term rentals is the vehicle that we're able to do this now. Right. Right. So like, yeah. So
everyone should find that vehicle, because one of the other things I love that you mentioned is this idea of having a plan B, because many of us have been put through an education system that was designed to put people into a factory or an office job that you were in for 30 or 40 years, and then you got a pension and were set for the rest of your life. Well, that is all fucked now. Our whole culture, financial system, our culture, the way we live our lives, all of that has changed. And so if you believe that that's the only way to move forward, you're probably going to end up being one of those people who loses a job and has no backup plan, has nothing to be able to move forward. Having a plan B, like you did with your short-term rentals, is something that we want to encourage more people to do.
Yeah. So let's put that carrot out there. After you consider expenses, maintenance, cleaning, mortgage interest rates, and all that, what kind of profits can people reasonably expect to make? If you're comfortable sharing your own information, that's great. If you want to give us some ranges of what you and your colleagues make, that's great too.
Yeah, I mean, I would just encourage people to look at my Instagram and our trips to Mykonos and all these fabulous places, you know, that show how much money we're making. I'm completely kidding there, right? You know,
Dan hasn't taken me to Mykonos yet. So pissed.
I have not been there either. You can make good money, but in real estate, you make money a number of different ways. So you make money with cash flow. You make money by paying down your mortgages. You make money with, you know, tax strategies, right? You know, so using depreciation to your advantage, like using the tax code to your advantage. And then, you know, as time goes on, property will appreciate in value. Like it will. Sometimes it won't appreciate as quickly as other times, but, you know, we've just been through a period where properties have appreciated dramatically in many markets over the past couple of years, you know, which also gives me the confidence that I have like all this kind of wealth I could like lean back onto. We're talking just a couple million dollars of net worth. I don't need everything. I don't need all the gifts. Like I just need enough to be happy. Okay. So we're not talking Zuckerberg money. We're not talking like Elon Musk money, you know, but just being able to have a couple million dollars worth of equity across a portfolio that is also cash flowing, is a good position to be in, because then we're able to keep bringing money in that fuels the properties. My goal is to have all of them net zero or cash flowing. Okay. And they're all almost there. One of them is not cash flowing right now, but we have a lot of depreciation we took on that property because we did something called a cost segregation study, because we file as real estate professionals. And by being able to do that, you know, we're able to take all this advanced depreciation. The only thing that was good that Trump did in his administration was having this pass. So we were able to take all this bonus depreciation early, get the cash now, and then reinvest it in other properties. So, you know, one of the good things about a real estate plan like this is that you do have multiple ways to actually earn money. So yeah, so every month, I mean, some of our properties, like last year, our goal with the properties that we own, so like we have the properties that we own, and then we have Pride Away Stays. Pride Away Stays, we just launched, all right? That is a co-hosting short-term rental property management business serving the LGBTQ plus owners of Provincetown, Massachusetts. Like literally, it's a very hyper-focused.
Is that like a Mr. B&B of Provincetown? Is that the correlation?
So Mr. B&B is a little bit different. Like, you know, they're kind of a market. There are two things. There are marketplace like Airbnb and Vrbo that, you know, people can go find gay-friendly places and gay accommodations. But then they also launched this social network or something where you could see what other travelers are happening in town, very Grindr-esque or something. We were on Mr. B&B a long time ago and really got no bookings through it. And Provincetown doesn't really seem to be super focused on that website. It seems to be very international. I just investigated it again recently, but like it hasn't been a big component. It's been a zero component to like our success, to be frankly honest. But you know, I support what they're doing and I'd like to figure out a way to do something deeper with them in Provincetown. But Airbnb and Vrbo and direct bookings are kind of the way that we get most of our bookings. For us, it's 70% Airbnb, 25% Vrbo, 5% direct is kind of what we see. We're trying to get the direct number a little bit up to about 10% or so, you know, with repeat guests and a couple strategies with marketing to past guests. But, you know, so Pride Away Stays is just getting off the ground, you know, like, so right now there's not a ton of revenue right there, but that's okay because we literally just launched it. We're building our brand. On the short-term rental side that we own, last year we did just under $400,000 of income. And then all the expenses trickle out of those and whatever's left over is the cash flow. This year, our goal's like 425 or something like that. Like, you know, we're going to increase the nightly rate a little bit. We have some months that one of our properties wasn't available last year because we just built it. So, you know, that property is really kicking butt and doing really well in some off months. But it's revenue that does have expense associated with it. But like if you manage your books really well, you know, with, you know, what you're paying out for cleaners and supplies and, you know, gardening and upgrades, you know, your P&L will have some money left over at the very end of the year. But I mean, every month, the properties probably appreciate by, I don't know, $20,000, $30,000. And I pay $8,000 off the mortgages each month, $7,000 off the mortgages each month. I mean, like, I don't know the exact numbers, but like I do track every month what the portfolio is worth. And, you know, if this property, you know, has a couple $100 that comes off the mortgage, this one has a couple thousand off the mortgage, next thing you know, you know, this portfolio versus 2 years ago is dramatically higher than it was then. So you just see all right. this net worth that in theory you could tap into.
You're paying down expenses.
It's no different than what a homeowner, they themselves want, right? A homeowner mm-hmm. themselves wants to pay down their mortgage. They want to increase the value of their property, whether that's through appreciation because of that's what's going on in the market, or appreciation because they're fixing it up, improving the curb appeal, although mm-hmm. it's the same, it's kind of the same concept that you as a real estate business want your the value of your business to increase because it yeah. gives you opportunity, right? That's what more income does for all of us, is it gives us more opportunity.
What I learned with the real estate investors is that they really don't own, they don't own 100% of anything. They own like 20% of everything, right? Everyone's always moving their money around. And we were able to do that when interest rates were lower, right? Interest rates are higher right now. And if you want to borrow against your home with a home equity line of credit or something, you know, you're probably paying 8-9% interest. Whereas when I was borrowing out of my HELOC back in the day to kind of really start to fuel our portfolio, I was getting teaser rates at like 1.7%, 1.8%, 1.92%, and it would jump up to 4%, right? You know, so I should also mention this, that like the loans that we have, we took on a higher interest rate DSCR loan. It's called a debt service coverage ratio loan for the most recent property that we bought. They evaluated the whole property based on its income potential, but then they also give you a higher rate. We took that on. It's in the eights because all of our other rates are in the threes and fours. Okay. These are fixed loan products, 20 or 30 year products that were well into a bunch of them as well. And we were comfortable taking on one more higher interest rate property because I had the lower interest rate properties. In theory, what I'd like to do, if rates pop down another couple of points, I'd like to refinance a couple of these properties and pull a lot of the equity out and then reinvest it elsewhere. But you know what you're seeing in real estate markets across the country is everyone is sitting on the sideline, right? Owners are sitting on the sideline because they have these sweet loans. They don't really have to go anywhere. Buyers are sitting on the sideline because they don't like where rates are, even though they're starting to dip their toe in a little bit more because they're realizing that this is really the new normal. So there's just a logjam of property moving. It's the same thing with, you know, tapping into equity. And some people, mostly the bros that want 5,000 doors, they don't care. They're like, I don't care what the rates are. Like, I'll just take my money out and go find another property that, you know, can cash flow with that rate. I'm a little more conservative because also I don't need to have all the cookies. Like, I just want enough to be happy that I don't want to take on a ridiculous amount of risk that puts my life and other things in jeopardy. Like, I could take on a little bit of risk. And I think that we're getting close to being able to tap into this property, our properties again. But we're not. I'm not quite there yet personally. So like when that happens, my plan is to continue to basically bring money out of the current portfolio we have and spread it across other properties. And that's how real estate investors tend to grow their portfolios.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, there's the one guy you used to follow who doesn't like to have any equity, right? Was that his strategy?
He really thinks that you shouldn't own any. The homes that you quote unquote own should be 100% cash flowing with no equity, right?
No equity.
He doesn't want you to have any equity because he thinks then you have a much higher cash flow and you can take that equity and put it into buying more properties.
That's a little bit
but I think he's also on that path to trying to have the 700,000 doors, right?
Opposite of Dave Ramsey, which is, you know, have no debt, right? And then just be secure. Yeah.
We try to do it as many things as different as Dave Ramsey as possible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, me too.
Let me ask you, what are some of the hidden costs, some of the things that people normally don't think about when they think about owning a short-term rental that you want people to know so that they're not surprised as they're starting to get into this?
So if you get into it, you have to make the property memorable and you don't want to be in the middle. So you don't want to have a property that you want to have one of the best ones or one of the really, really budget ones. The middle is where people are losing right now. So it's very tempting to buy a property and then go on Facebook Marketplace and furnish it that way and find things at tag sales and yard sales and then take the furniture that was sold with it and call it a day and put up cell phone pictures and think you're going to do really well. That's kind of gone. Right? There's more supply in short-term rentals right now. A lot of markets are really saturated by bed count. So the saturation isn't as much like in the guys from STR Secrets, his name is Kenny Bedwell. He says this, that the saturation isn't as much the market, it's the saturation by bed count. You know, we just launched a property last year that we built from the ground up, like 2,500 square foot, 4-bedroom house, sleeps 14 people in 4 king beds, plus some bunks downstairs. And it's doing really well, knock on wood, because, you know, we served a market that didn't really have too many other properties that were similar to that in the area. So we weren't saturated by bed count. So therefore I'm getting pretty consistent bookings in a property like that. But that property costs a lot of money to get off the ground.
Right.
Now, I had a construction loan on the property. I got the loan closed before I left my job. It's a 3% loan and it's an amazing, amazing loan product. I wouldn't be able to do it without that loan. But then literally putting money into that property, like it probably cost us $80,000 to furnish it, to get nice towels, nice linens, supplies. You know, the amount of times I've gone to, you know, the Costco's equivalent up here, there's BJ's Wholesale. We also have Costco, but like I go to BJ's Wholesale. You know, it's not uncommon to be walking out of there having spent $700 on a big pallet full of Bounty towels, toilet paper, shampoo, soap, little things like that. So it's expensive. It is expensive to get it off the ground. But like, for example, had I not done all that stuff, I'd be sitting with a house that I built that's unfurnished that I can't make income from. So I had to invest money into making the house look fantastic. Professional photos. Like you have to do professional photos. Get them staged. Like if you look at my pictures, like they have flowers, they have charcuterie, they have wine, they have a set table. Like they have disclaimers that none of this stuff will be there when you get there, but it looks pretty in the photos.
Right. Oh, that's a great lead up to our next, one of our follow-up questions.
Yeah. I did, but yeah,
No, I do appreciate what you're saying here, especially about the photos, because I think back to the days when Airbnb first began, right? It was this way of somebody being able to say, I'm going to be away for a week or two. You want to rent my place, or I have an extra room in my house. Would you like to stay here for a while? And I remember the pictures back then. I remember looking at some of these pictures, and John and I would be scrolling through some of them and going, don't know if we want to stay there. and now you see it, and it really is, it's short-term rentals have decided, or they, many short-term renters have decided that what they want to provide is a first-class experience for people, because that's what most people want when they go on vacation, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want to go and feel like they're living in someone else's house. They want to go and feel like they're living in a place that's for them. And so I
spent a week in a hair salon floor in Spain. We were in Barcelona, and the guy had just bought the hair salon. He was going to convert it into an Airbnb or Mr. B&B. So the only thing that he had in there was a bed and a kitchen, but all like the hair salon stuff was still up, and it was gnarly.
It was. So,
but let me ask this, like, so the expectation that he set for you, did he deliver on that and less?
Yeah. Part of the reason why we chose it is this was back when John and I decided to do a 30-day honeymoon. Mm-hmm. And we literally said, how can we be gone for 30 days on our honeymoon and do this really, really cheaply? And one of the ways we did that was staying 4 or 5 nights in Barcelona in a place that I think it cost us about $50 a night, right?
We could walk to everything, like everything we wanted.
But we
bars, regular bars, nice mm-hmm. restaurants, everything was walking distance.
Yeah, we understood that the only time we were really going to be in there was when we were sleeping. So we really only needed a bed and a place to shower.
So it worked for you. And another to answer your previous question also, I would say that you should make sure that the expectation that you're setting as a host with your pictures, your description, is exactly what you deliver, or you over-deliver. Okay, so you can't lie. You can't overpromise. Like we might get to one of your questions about some of the gays in Provincetown that have stayed, but I've hosted people for 7 years at our property in Provincetown, because we bought that one in 2018. And, you know, it's Provincetown properties are all over the map. You have gorgeous, gorgeous homes overlooking the water, and people can live their fabulous life if they want to. But guess what? You're paying a lot of money, not just a lot of money, a lot of money for those properties. Okay. The property that we have is, we drive revenue. Like, we try to pull as much as we can out of the property because we have a really short window of time to really kind of earn money on the property. And we're dog friendly. And that's kind of been our key, is that like everyone travels with their dog, and like our property lends really well to having dogs there. But if you're looking for a fabulous view overlooking Provincetown Bay or even sunlight, you're not really going to get it from our specific unit, the one that I own, not the ones that we host, but the one that I own. But I make that really, really clear in the description. My avatar, my customer, is someone that's going to Provincetown, probably with a dog, who's going to be out living their fabulous life all over Commercial and Bradford Street. Okay. They are not going to be the ones that are coming back to have the party at our place, because it doesn't really, we don't have the party place. We have the place that you can sleep in cool, dark accommodations, because the bedrooms are downstairs. So when you're out partying all night, the sun comes up early, like, you'll get a good night's sleep afterward. And we're right in the middle of everything. We're on the West End, really close to, you know, you're just an 8-minute walk from Tea Dance, basically, if you know Provincetown. And that's just our specific property, right? Prideaway Stays properties, you know, we're going to be managing properties all over town. But we set that expectation. Last year, I had somebody that like really trashed us. The only 1-star review I've gotten in 7 or 8 years. And he was just a bad guest too, but like, he clearly didn't read anything in the description. And when he got there, it was not what he was expecting. And I was saying to myself, did I not make this clear? Did I not give good messaging in advance? Like, where did I let this guy down that he wasn't able to figure out exactly what property it was that he rented? So I did tweak some of my messaging a little bit in some areas that I maybe thought things might have been a little ambiguous, but I did put in my booking message. Like, when you book one of our places, you get an auto message that has all this information in it. And I said, please, once again, look through the description and the photos of this property. If you need to cancel for whatever reason, because it's not exactly what you're thinking of, please, let's do that next 24 hours, no penalty. And then on we go. because you need to be clear if you're a host, all right? If you're not clear and your guests show up and they think they're getting one thing and they're getting something else, it's going to be reflected in, you know, how they treat your property. It's going to be reflected in your reviews, and that will be a downward spiral for your portfolio.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting. The way you're describing this is kind of the way I think about the restaurant industry, right? The reason why Chipotle is doing so much business is because everybody knows exactly what they're going to get when they go into Chipotle. Well, the reason why people love to go to certain high-end restaurants is because they know exactly what they're going to get when they drop $250 on dinner. It's because they know they're going to get a quality meal that they absolutely love in an environment that's perfect. Well, you have to do the same thing with your properties, right? Are you providing a Chipotle or are you providing the high end?
Yeah. And, you know, you also want to reflect the market. You know, Provincetown, I'll focus on that a little bit, you know, because it is, in my opinion, the gayest place in the country. Like, I haven't been to all the other gay places, but have you guys been to P-Town before or no?
I have not.
I have.
Yes. You have. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, there's a limited amount of property there. And there are some weeks in the summertime that, you know, there's 60,000 people in town, right? There's 1,000 short-term rentals, plus there's bed and breakfasts and hotels, but there's just not enough to accommodate people on the really, really busy weeks and most of the summer weeks. So what does that mean? It's supply and demand. The price goes up on the properties because owners realize there's going to be competition for people who can stay there. And income equality and a lot of people that are in our community, you know, aren't making a ton of money and they still want to be able to like experience the lifestyle. And I totally get that. You know, one thing I've discussed in the past is how Provincetown is open all year. You know, really Q1 is kind of the only part of the year that it's a lot slower. And, you know, if you can't afford those weeks in the summertime that, you know, everyone is on Instagram living their fabulous best lives, the shoulder season's beautiful. You know, so May, June, September, October, you could find deals and find, you know, time to get to a place like Provincetown to have your magical experience and spend less money. If you're just going during the times that aren't as high demand, it's the same thing as the airlines, same thing as hotels. You know, if everyone wants to fly to a destination during a certain week, the airline's going to try to make as much money as they can. And, you know, there's no lack of fairness to it. There's opportunities to travel to those places during periods where maybe it's a little bit more in your budget.
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest, that's the time that my previous partner and I went, is we went in October in part because we knew it was going to be a much cheaper time and we could stay at a nicer place for the same amount of money that we could have stayed in a much less nice place during the peak season. But we still experienced great restaurants, tea dance, meeting lots of people, enjoyed the beach, all of that. Yeah, it was a little cold. We didn't run around in Speedos. We were in windbreakers and shorts, but hey, we still enjoyed it.
There was a Speedo underneath.
I mean, yeah. And you know what? The trees and the leaves and the flowers are often still out in September and October. You know, climate change has kind of shifted a bit in the Northeast where like our cold months right now are really February, you know, and like our summer and fall is extending a little bit deeper into the year. And I think the fall is the best season anyway, like personally. So, you know, it's a good time to go to P-Town.
Yeah. So you kind of touched on and alluded it a little bit. How do you mitigate the risks of people, for whatever reason, they want to get back at you or they're just horrible people, trash or steal your decor or just leave you nasty reviews that doesn't necessarily correlate with the experience that you provided? How do you manage that? Because I think some people might have an aversion to getting into short-term rental specifically, in part because of some of those nightmare experiences that you kind of hear on the evening news.
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's a couple things. I think that first of all, again, setting the right expectation in the description of your property. So in New Hampshire, for example, we take great pride in all our properties. We photograph them really well. We appoint them nicely. If stuff breaks, it's not something that is going to be a family heirloom or something that I can't replace, but it's all stuff that looks really nice. So I feel like if we present a really welcoming environment, and you know, you have 4 and 5 and 6-year-old kids, they don't care about this stuff. They just run around like crazy. But like for the adults, if you present an environment like that, we hope that people are going to treat it, you know, better than their own home. At least when I've rented short-term rentals from other people, like I get nervous touching stuff, not because of germs, because of like, I don't want to screw anything up. So like, I try to leave everything exactly as I found it. We find that we have a lot of guests that are like that as well. We have other guests that are like, well, I'm paying a cleaning fee. So like they'll clean the whole thing up afterward, you know, and they might leave it a little bit messy, but not trashed. Like that's fine. Like those are the kind of guests that are fine. But, you know, and I have my mother's artwork in all of our properties. Like she, you know, painted these beautiful, you know, 3-foot by 4-foot acrylic paintings her whole life. And I put in the messaging some kind of cheeky stuff, like, you know, all the artwork is my mother's artwork, or like, you know, all the artwork is local to Provincetown, or all the artwork is this. We take great pride in curating, you know, an experience for your property, for the property. You know, we appreciate it if you wouldn't damage anything, or just, you know, be careful around these types of things. So we try to create that level of pride in our properties, that we spent a lot of money on them. Like it cost us money. This is how we live. So please kind of treat it that way. In New Hampshire, I make it clear that I have relatives that live down the street and that my neighbor cleans for us. So, you know, eyes are on the property, but they're not on the property, right? Like if you need anything and you can't get a hold of me, like, you know, my neighbor is super great and she might be able to help in a pinch, or my in-laws live down the street. I've never had anybody contact those people for anything, but having that in there is a little reminder that like, oh, by the way, there's people nearby who know that this is a short-term rental. I do also impart in New Hampshire that there are people that live there full-time. I say our neighbors on our left, our neighbors on our right live there full-time. You know, we do have, you know, we do want to be really good neighbors to everybody. So just be respectful for the following reasons. So there's all that stuff. That's the whole like fluffy stuff you could do. But the other answer to your question is insurance. Okay. So there is not just homeowners insurance, and the insurance that we work with, a company called Proper Insurance. They specifically write homeowners policies for people that are short-term renting their properties. If you're going to short-term rent your property and you're not telling your insurance company, you're in for it. You need to let them know that you're doing it. There might be a higher premium. There might be a rider they have to put on it, or they might not be able to underwrite you in the first place. But you want to protect yourself in case something really catastrophic happens. Proper does that. Knockwood, we haven't had a situation that I had to like really file a claim with any of those companies, but Proper claims to do that. They're underwritten by Lloyd's of London. They specifically do it. It's more expensive, but I feel better. Secondly, there's also insurance you can get from a company called Wavo. There's another company called Safely. They'll insure guests, meaning I pay $30 per set of guests that show up. If stuff happens, things break, wine gets spilled somewhere, I can't get it cleaned out, whatever, take pictures, document it, and then in theory, they're going to reimburse me for those types of extra cleanings or all those kind of per guest things that wouldn't be a homeowner's policy issue, but there would be another policy that can come in there. And then Airbnb and Vrbo, they also offer insurance.
So the Lloyd's of London one, do you have to do that every time somebody registers to be a guest in one of your properties?
No, that's my homeowner's policy, just like you might have State Farm or Allstate or anything. Like, so my 5 short-term rentals, their policies are all through Proper Insurance. Okay. And I pay more for that. For 3 of those properties, for the larger ones, I have a second policy through Wavo. They're actually a sister company of Proper. I don't get a discount, but I should, because I have multiple policies with them. Wavo, I just basically submit a list of who stayed at the properties each month. In fact, I have to submit it in the next couple of days, and they'll have a list. They'll charge me accordingly. And then if there are any claims, I have to file them within like 15 or 30 days or something like that with documentation, you know, photos from my cleaners and what happened. And I have filed a couple of claims over the past few months for knick-knacky things that happened, and they've paid most of them out.
It's another added cost of running a business, right? I mean, that's folks, that's the thing to remember. This is running a business, and this is one of the costs of running a business. I mean, it's the same thing for if you have a long-term rental, right? We live in a duplex and we rent half of our duplex. We have to have a different kind of insurance for our place because we have a renter. There's just an added cost to having a business.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's face it, you can get away with doing a lot of this stuff without these things, but you're kind of skirting some issues that might happen down the line. And I'll fully admit the first couple of years that we were doing this, we were, again, doing it on our own. So like all of my funds were commingled. Like all the money came into my personal checking account and paid out of the personal checking account.
Oopsie.
Once I got everything set, right? Like, so once that, you know, my job ended, I moved into this, I'm going to be a big boy and do this full time. You know, I have a different bank account for each of the properties that we own. I have a bookkeeper that does a P&L for each property every single month. I have a QuickBooks where we can keep track of all of our expenses. I have somewhere I could submit my receipts. I have multiple corporate cards and multiple LLCs that I could actually put for my business expenses. So my personal finances don't have business expenses on my personal credit cards. Therefore, my personal credit cards have lower balances and therefore my credit score is higher, so I could apply for more credit. Like it all kind of ties together.
Do you have each property in a different LLC?
Most of them are, but they're not all in different LLCs for a couple of reasons. A couple of the loans were second home loans. And, you know, the attorney husband I have, we can't just deed it over to the LLC without the loan potentially getting called by the bank. So we don't want that to happen. So we're putting protection in place for the properties just to make sure that like if we get sued, that the whole portfolio doesn't go down with it. We have a bunch of them in LLCs, and the ones that aren't, we'd like to refinance those. And when we do, they will be into LLCs, but right now they're not.
That's the goal. Gotcha. David, do you want to ask your follow-up question? This comes from his particular experience.
Uh-oh. So where are we going with this one?
Are you talking about the pitching?
The one right there?
Let me get my coffee. Hang on a second.
All right.
Is there Bailey's in that, I hope?
It's a Monday morning. Not yet.
How do you deal with the bitchy gays who leave a bad review because you didn't provide them with enough lube and poppers and porn? No. I mean, all jokes aside, one of the hosts that we do know got a bad review because he literally did not leave granulated turbinado sugar. He got a one-star review because he didn't have granulated turbinado sugar. How do you deal with that?
I don't even know how to say that word, turbinado sugar, whatever it is.
Like, I thought I was saying it
wrong the whole time too.
I mean, I think I have Domino sugar packets like in our property, but like we do offer a number of sweeteners. There's some Equal and Sweet and Low and Stevia, I guess. Splenda is my preferred for my iced coffee. Did they say it was going to be there and it wasn't? Or did this person just, I mean, that's just, it's a bit unreasonable. I mean, so there are ways to get reviews removed if things were put in there that were malicious or that were completely contrary to what the listing said, or if there's evidence that shows that that's not a legitimate review. It's not simple. Vrbo won't do it. Airbnb has done it for me like once, and another time, like I fought and I couldn't get a review taken down. But the majority of reviews are like my rating on Airbnb is a 4.95 right now, you know, and I've been a super host right now 27 quarters. So 27 times I qualify for super host. Vrbo, I think it's been like 26 for premier host. So I think that like there will be some people who are reasonable, and if they see amazing, amazing reviews and then one really weird, bad review, they'll probably discount it. And they'll probably say, all right, this person's just nuts. Cause like, let's face it, like there's a lot of crazy people out there these days, and they all have, you know, the same podium on which to post things. You also can, you could respond to reviews on these things. So like if somebody wrote something that is just so outlandish that you can't get taken down, you can write something that is not attacking the person. Like there's probably a really keen way to be clever in what you're saying back and make the person look bad for even giving you that review for that reason. You don't want to seem catty as a host. And in fact, one thing I would encourage is responding to all the reviews that you get, even if it's a thank you or awesome, it was great to have you. Because let's say you have 100 reviews, you don't respond to any of them, even with a thumbs up or whatever it is. And then the one bad one is the one that you come after and you respond to. That's going to look weird for the host, that you're like feeling threatened and therefore you have to like say something. So if you can get it into your common everyday practice of responding to, it doesn't have to be every review, but if you could respond, if there was a culture of responding to reviews, then one bad review that you respond to, it's not like it's out of the blue that you're responding to it. You're just responding as you normally would. But you could certainly turn the table and say, well, I'm sorry that we didn't have that sweetener that you were hoping for. We do offer the following sweeteners for our coffee bar. And we noticed that, you know, you booked these days or whatever it was. We hope that you enjoyed your time in town and we'll look forward to seeing you again. Like take the high road, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, people don't do that enough these days.
Yeah.
Very, very, very pragmatic of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is there anything else? I know we've kind of meandered in this conversation. Is there anything else that you would like to say to folks who are listening, who may be thinking about becoming short-term rental hosts as kind of the last reminder that this is still something that is worth looking into?
Yeah. First of all, not a shocker that a conversation with me meandered. So, you know, that is
so it's your fault?
On me.
I thought it was
a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's my fault. You know, so I'm a big proponent in planning ahead. All right. And this kind of goes back to the like, start with your why. Like, why do you want to do it? What is the goal that you want to get? Is it financial stability? Is it additional income? Is it being able to brag that you have another property and this is a way to offset the cost? Is it because you're planning a family and you want to have another income stream in case something happens at your job? Is it because you were laid off and you need to find something to do? I think if you were laid off and you, first of all, it's gonna be hard to qualify for financing for properties if you don't have a job. Okay. So like, I think it's important to do this stuff while you are still working a W-2 job. If your plan years down the line is to transition away from the job or have a backup plan, you know, I'm sure you've covered this on this podcast, but it's infinitely easier to qualify for a loan, for a mortgage, if you have a W-2 job. It just is. All right. So start to plant those seeds now. You know, time is on your side with real estate. Meaning if you're looking to make a quick buck today or tomorrow, go do something else. All right. You know, the play with real estate is longer term. We started planting seeds. I mean, I bought my first property, my primary home in 2003. We upgraded that 10 years later when my husband moved in and I'm like, there's not enough room on the couch. So like, I need more space. So we got a bigger space in the city. And then, you know, 7 or 8 years later, we moved up here to Newburyport. But along the way, I looked for opportunities to pull money out and then reinvest that, which is what we did. So we fueled a lot of this through some home equity lines of credit, plus some savings. So I would say start that plan now. Figure out the why, see where you are, see if you can get in that first property. Don't worry too much about rates right now. You know, they will fluctuate. You could always refinance, but you want to make sure the numbers work where the rates are right now. So if you are working your full-time job, you could probably buy a property if you're buying it correctly, because you're making your money on the buy, if you're buying it correctly and it's breaking even at the very, you don't want to have a property that's going to be underwater. Like that's just going to be a liability. It's going to be a stress in your life. It's going to lead to some issues that you might have in your relationship and stuff. And you don't want that to happen. Okay. So let's say you could find a property that you enjoy. It's a new project. It's a market you like. You could find enough money to do a down payment. You have a bank that's going to qualify you for a loan and you could figure out how to make that thing break even. All right. That I think is a good investment today, because as time goes on, you're going to get smarter. Your systems are going to be more efficient. You could bring your rate up, you know, because if you lock in a loan, the rate's really what's going to be variable with what you could charge every night. And if you're picking the right market that's not super oversaturated by the bedroom count, you could start to charge more as time goes on, as you get better reviews, as your property gets highlighted more. You'll be more efficient with your expenses. That number might come down a little bit. And next thing you know, there might be a little bit of money that you're making on a property that, by the way, is appreciating in value and you're paying down the mortgage. So, you know, I would say get into it now if you have a job. If you don't have a job and you kind of want to get into this business, there is another backdoor way into it called co-hosting. There's a third way called arbitrage. I would not recommend that. But co-hosting, I would recommend that. And all you have to do is try to partner up with somebody that wants somebody to host their property. You'll take a 15, 20, 25% rate off of the gross income they get. If you can convince them that you are going to be the one that's going to property manage and host that property, communicate with your guests, deal with maintenance, deal with requests, and then deal with the finances. You can get into property and do that without owning property. So a lot of people that are in my short-term rental secrets mastermind group, maybe they own one property. Maybe they built up a co-hosting business of 9-10 properties that they could then use that cash to go buy another property. That's kind of how the recipe is with the people that I've networked with. We're doing it backwards in that we bought 5 properties over time and now we're launching the co-hosting business because I feel super comfortable that like serving the LGBTQ plus community of owners in Provincetown, a market we know, a market we love, a community that we love, nobody else is doing this the way that Pride Away Stays is doing it. We're like, it's the right time, the right place for us. But you can get in and not have to put money into a business as a co-host. So that is another backdoor way into this industry, but just read up on it, learn about co-hosting, avoid the noise. There's so much noise about short-term rentals right now, you know, and people in the STR groups that are free on Facebook, all they talk about are bad guests to the point that I had to like remove myself from these groups. I'm like, where are all these bad guests? Like I've been doing this for 8 years. Like some of them are messy. Some of them are not awesome, but they're not as terrible as everyone's saying. So I don't know, find the right guest avatar too.
Yeah.
I know that we're trying to wrap this up here, but you said something in that explanation that I want to touch on that comes up a lot in with real estate investing. And that is that you make your profit on the purchase. Can you elaborate on that, I don't know, theory is not the right word, that idiom?
Yeah. So if you could negotiate, if you could find the right property for someone that either needs to sell it right now or get out of the property, or you can negotiate a price that works today, works in today's numbers, you know, the gentle hand of real estate should push it up as time goes on, because real estate tends to appreciate. If you're overpaying now, you know, and then either if you lose 10% of the value and you've overpaid now, well, now you're in a hole to get out of, to get back to a property that you shouldn't have bought in the first place, to then see that appreciation. So, you know, not every property is going to be negotiated. Like, in fact, there might be an over ask offer that you're putting in right now that still turns into a good investment because of, you know, the direction of the market. But, you know, you really want to lock in a good price for what you're buying your real estate today and make sure the numbers work today on that number, because you just never know if you're going to have a temporary drop in that price. So don't go buy anything and overbuy, because if you find that you can't make money on this property and you're underwater on the property and need to sell it in 2 years and you're selling it for a loss, that's a tough situation to be in.
It's interesting that you say that with the market the way it is right now, it seems like a lot of people who are selling right now are people who are selling because they have to sell, right? So you have homes where maybe grandma or grandpa had moved on to a care facility, or they have passed away and the family no longer wants this property. It may not have been maintained as up to today's standards for like the last 10 years. Those are the kind of properties you're probably going to be able to get a better deal on. A lot of people who are moving or putting their properties up for sale today are not likely the people who are saying, I'm going on and moving into something bigger, because they locked in a loan at 3 or 4%. So this may be the good opportunity right now, especially in some markets, to have a little bit of negotiating power.
Yeah. I mean, think about the value add opportunity. You know, like, value add is important. And if you could add to a property and you could actually, you know, redo a bathroom or improve the siding or do some capital improvements on a property that needs to get improved, well, you know, that's how you're going to make your money. Like, you negotiate a good price, talk to the owners and say, hey, listen, you know, this amount of work needs to get done on the property. So here's what my offer is going to be. If you could find a middle ground and then you can get, you know, a way to finance the improvements, you could improve the property and suddenly get it reappraised and it's worth more.
Right. Yeah. Our good friend Tom, the frugal gay, likes to call this adding your gay sparkle, right? The gays are good.
Who is this
at
person? I need to meet Tom, the frugal gay. I like this.
Yeah, actually, Tom is big in the real estate space online. So check out Tom on the socials. He's the frugal gay 11. He's big in the real estate space. So he's been on Bigger Pockets podcast as well.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, I think this has been a super meaty and valuable discussion. How can our listeners and viewers connect with you on social media, and how can people book reservations to stay at one of your properties?
Mm-hmm. So hopefully there'll be some links in the show notes also, but jasonmuth.com, M-U-T-H, that leads to everywhere. The businesses that we have, Pride Away Stays, if you happen to be listening to this and own in Provincetown or want to know anything about Provincetown, short-term rentals, want to work with us, you can go to prideawaystays.com. And if you want to book any of our properties, I would encourage you to book it directly with us. You can go online and find me, but if you go to straightforwardstrs.com, you can get the direct booking links and you could save on Airbnb and Vrbo fees, which could amount to a lot of money. So we have direct booking engines on that spot, and we'd love to offer that up to all of your listeners and viewers.
Awesome. Thank you. And then, okay, don't want to forget, you have a podcast as well, right?
We do. Oh my God, I can't believe I almost forgot that. We're recording in about an hour, right? So we have the Real Estate Law Podcast. So I'm the host. My husband, Rory Gill, is also a host. I do all the guest bookings and executive producer. And, you know, we have, you know, professional production and everything done afterward and social media handled by somebody else. But we're about 160 episodes in, I think.
Nice.
We don't, you know, shy away from the word law. We don't always talk law. A lot of times we'll just, you know, talk about real estate or various components of the real estate world. But we've talked to, you know, just you name it, like the types of real estate investors that we've spoken to. We talked to real estate agents, commercial real estate brokers, people on the financing side, you know, people that are building portfolios, short-term rental folks, real estate attorneys, branding people. We try to weave some law into every episode just to be true to our name, but we don't always go down the law road all that much, but there will be something that Rory throws in there or I throw in there. But yeah, we love doing the Real Estate Law Podcast. You can go there. .com or find us on iTunes and enjoy some of the episodes there. And yeah, it's been a creature comfort of ours. So we haven't parlayed it into the empire that you guys have just yet, but you know, it's helped with some credibility.
Right on. Well, we'll definitely have at least all that information in the show notes, as well as the Queer Money Podcast newsletter. That'll go out the week of this publishes. So thank you very much, Jason, for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Queer Money is made possible by Capital One. Capital One believes that financial well-being includes your mental, physical, and financial health. Check out CapitalOne.com today.
Thank you, Jason, for a great interview. Hopefully you inspired our listeners and viewers to think about how they too can get into real estate investing. Thank you to you, our listeners and viewers, for joining us for another episode. Remember to get your Queer Money takeaway and resources we mentioned in this episode in this week's Queer Money newsletter.
Then join us this Thursday when we cover the most affordable LGBTQ+ friendly cities in blue states, and next Tuesday when we celebrate the 500th episode of the Queer Money podcast. Thank you and have a great week.